My name's Andy Goldring. Hello, evening. Thank you very much indeed for inviting me. I kind of do permaculture quite a lot. I'll say a little bit about what that is in a minute. I'm a coordinator of the Permaculture Association, which is a national charity that supports permaculture in Britain. I'm a designer and a teacher, and I've got a little Victorian terraced place in Leeds, very urban, so I'm kind of converting a backyard, which is about this big, and a big, big joy of my life in the last few months is my next door neighbour's decided he doesn't want his garden, and can I do it for him? So I've now got two bits this big, which is quite good. But I'm not particularly green-fingered, but I kind of came to permaculture because I just saw these. I was in a phone box and found out about it. And it was a very sort of, you know, short way of telling you a long story. Anyway, I thought, wow, this is really interesting. And I've got the book and I fell in love with all the images and fantastic, kind of inspiring diagrams of clever things about, you know, how pigs can rub up against posts and keep healthy. And it was just very exciting. Since for the last 15 or so years, I've basically been getting more and more interested in permaculture and sustainability in general, and really I've kind of realised that just how useful it is, and more and more all the time. What else to say about me? Nothing else about me. I suppose the other thing about the reason I'm here, I suppose, is because I was involved in a project called SPAN, and the project I was given to look after was the LEAF project in Sheffield, in North Sheffield, with Diane, which was a great pleasure for 2.5 years or something, 2 years. And I was invited to come along and help facilitate sort of your launch of Grow Sheffield. So it's quite nice to come back and see. But actually, I think you've got as many people, you know, a couple of years on with an AGM, which is, you know, brackets, boring. So that's, it's really good that so many people are here and interested. So tonight, I was told, you know, half an hour, just do a talk. And then Vanessa said, you're going to do a presentation. God, I lost my nerve, but well, I'll do some pictures as well. Not really very many. And really, I suppose I'm going to say a little bit about permaculture. I'm going to say a little bit about the kind of wider context, where we're at. A little bit about a vision of where we might be wanting to go, and some initiatives that are happening around Britain and wider, that we could learn from and connect with. And hopefully at the end, I'm going to infuse you to keep going with all the work that you've got on, and do more of it, and connect into other people and other initiatives, and you know, basically keep it rolling, really. So, and I'm going to try and do that quite briefly, because I think actually much more interesting than listening to me talking would be kind of questions and discussion, and that could be just questions to me or just general discussion, and I'll kind of back out and let you carry on. So, if I'm talking for more than sort of 20 minutes, start. There's tomatoes over there, so you know, start from there. Grow Sheffield.
Grow Sheffield, grow.
That one, maybe? Okay, so permaculture. I don't know how many people know about what permaculture is, but it basically comes from the words permanent agriculture and permanent culture, and really the kind of the simple way to I think about it is that it's like living on the planet if we expect to be here for more than the next 50 or 60 years. So it's really, how would we inhabit the planet if we actually intended to be here for hundreds more years or even thousands more years? Well, we'd probably make sure we look after the soil, the water, and we don't use all our non-renewable resources faster than we possibly, you know, as slowly as possible, we use them really slowly, and we build up systems which keep us nice and stable. And that's what permaculture is all about. It's Okay, so that's the kind of the word. And I suppose the things that you put in to make a permaculture cake, there's three essential ingredients. Okay, so one essential ingredient are the ethics, and they're dead easy. It's what any kind of 5-year-old would tell you, and I think, you know, the sooner we've got 5-year-olds in charge, the better. Because basically they do know the difference between right and wrong, which we seem to somehow kind of muddy the waters as we get older. So they say, well, of course, we'll look after each other, share what we've got, and don't hurt other things as much as possible. And that's really quite sensible, you know, that actually human beings with our incredible intelligence, it kind of makes sense that we should be able to organise things so that we can look after each other, look after the earth, basically a great big resource that looks after us, and share what we've got. So it sounds like kids' stuff, and really it is. And what we're saying in permaculture is that's what we're trying to achieve, is a sort of world where we look after each other and our wider resources. Now, of course, that might come across as being naive, and there's lots of clever ways of actually achieving that. But basically, that's what we're trying to do. So that's the ethics, it's the first ingredient. And that's not unique to permaculture. Of course, the great thing is, actually, we share that broad aim with billions of other people. We just haven't quite worked out how to connect everyone around this sort of central organising idea and make it become more powerful than the, you know, ideas which are about let's grab as much for ourselves as possible and become as rich as possible at the expense of others kind of concepts, which seem to be fairly dominant as well. So you've got the ethics. The second big thing about permaculture is basically it makes one really big assumption or assertion. It says basically the best model of sustainability that we've got is nature. Nature works. It's got 2.5-3 billion years of R&D invested into it. You know, the best solar panel that we've got and probably ever likely to have is the leaf. It's fantastic. It works brilliantly. You know, it's the only, well, so far, it's the only thing we can capture photons and turn it into. I know we've got PV cells, but you know, we've got the leaf's incredible. I'm incredible. This is an incredible thing. You know, I can eat chips and drink red wine, and you know, I have stopped smoking, but occasional fag, and I still manage to get up the next day, function, because it does it itself. It's self-organising, self-maintaining, self-organising system, as are the forests, the oceans, etc., etc. But these ecosystems which work brilliantly. So basically, permaculture says, well, okay, if nature is sustainable, you know, you can say it's cruel and there's all sorts of horrible, nasty bits in there as well, but broadly speaking, is it a useful model of how sustainable systems work? If you say yes, it is, then okay, how does it work? What principles are there that we can then use and apply when we create our own systems? Okay, so one example of an ecological principle is all ecosystems catch and store energy. All based around photosynthesis. So the leaves go out, they catch the sunlight, they turn that into a whole set of complex carbohydrates, and a whole food chain builds around that. With plants right at the very bottom of the food chain, all these plants, then you get things that eat the plants, and then things that eat the plants, etc., etc., etc. It all comes out from that. And things die and decay, and the soil builds up, and forests build up. And what's happening is it's building a bigger and bigger and bigger store of energy in the form of, in all sorts of forms. Yeah, so natural systems catch and store energy. So when we're thinking about Sheffield or my back garden, I'm thinking, how can I catch and store energy in my system? So that might be, I'm going to put a solar panel up and a solar water heating system up on my south-facing roof and connect that to a 300-litre cylinder to capture the hot water and insulate it really well, and I'll store that for when I need it. Mm-hmm. Or it could be that I'm going to have fruit trees or salads or build up my soil. But I'm looking for ways to capture and store energy. Second thing all natural systems do is basically we have to obtain a yield. You know, if we kept talking, then I suppose at the end of the day, we're probably not going to feel too hungry. But if I kept talking and kept talking, then eventually fall asleep and then wake up again, we're going, oh, God, we're hungry. We need to get something to eat. If we don't have something to eat, start feeling a bit, we can't continue. So we need to obtain a yield. It's obvious. So why we've got to create, make sure that the systems around us provide us with all sorts of yields. So again, if I'm thinking about buying back a garden, or I'm thinking about Sheffield or Leeds or wherever it might be, I'm thinking, how do I design this space to give me as many yields as possible? Okay? So that's kind of a couple of ideas on ecological principles. And then the third bit about permaculture is about designing. And designing being in this situation, designing is basically where we create a kind of a plan of action, if you like. It's with the skills we've got, the resources we've got, in this situation, with this sort of land, and the sun coming up and going down over there, and the wind coming from that direction, and you know, these existing plants and this big pile of resources, how can we arrange them in space and sometimes even in time to be more productive? So design is where you can put all your different elements together and think about how you create a plan of action which makes better use of what you've got and will basically, you know, do all those things like obtaining the yield. So feed you more, meet more of your kind of needs. Okay, so maybe that's enough about permaculture, because we can always ask some questions later. Just wanted to give you a bit of an overview. To me, it's about thinking about the long term, combining ethics, ecological principles, and design, and creating kind of systems like this, basically, where you've got, you can't really see it on the slide, but on the other side of the hill here, this is all monoculture. There's kind of two or three species there in terms of big trees. This side looked the same as this. On this side, they've now got, you know, hundreds of species. They've got about 15 different businesses. They've got 70 ponds for exporting energy. You know, it's incredibly diverse and productive. It's basically the same terrain. One, they said, can't do much here because it's a cold hillside. We'll just have a monoculture forest. One, they said, so much we could do here. And all the time I think, what else can we do here? What else can we do here? One's basically a monoculture, one's a polyculture. This is the kind of landscapes I think we need to create. That's actually in Austria. That's in the Lungau region, which is the coldest bit of Austria, about 1,500 metres above sea level, a place called Kremitahof. And I like that example because people sometimes think permaculture only works in Australia. Okay, let's move on to the next thing. So, context. Why bother? Why do permaculture? Why do any of these kinds of things? As I said, I mean, the reason I initially got interested in permaculture wasn't because of anything gloomy, but because I was really inspired by the kind of positivity of it, really, the kind of optimism of it. The fact that it offers kind of a quality of life, I mean, a way to think about the quality of life. But of course, there's other reasons which are kind of more maybe pressing. So you probably know all of them anyway, so I'm just going to list them very briefly. It's got things like climate change, of course, which is going to affect our weather very significantly, and therefore the sorts of things we can grow, and the likelihood of, and that brings us on to food security. Are we going to have, if the weather's changing and water's changing, are we going to be able to rely on crops coming from other parts of the world? You know, seen prices of food increasing enormously. And fluctuating enormously. Soil, huge issue. People aren't really still talking about it as much as we need them to. Everyone talks about peak oil. Forget peak oil. 99% of human history we did without oil. There's not a single generation that's done without soil. And we're kind of pretty much halfway through it. So that's as critical, if not much more critical. we've got resource depletion generally. You know, phosphorus, for example, the pessimists say we've got about 32 years. So Soil Association conference, I've got all the exact figures if you want them. Optimists say we've got 64 years.
Wow.
Well, you know, okay, if we're looking at rock phosphate, we're saying it's somewhere between 30 and 60. If you're thinking about living on the planet for the next 1,000 years, actually, they're both irrelevant. The difference between 30 and 60 is kind of, well, maybe we actually need to think of a completely different way of getting our phosphorus into the fields. Where's the phosphorus? It's in our poo. Damn. That means we can't just rely on important things. No. All sorts of interesting things come up about resource depletion. And obviously, the cost of inputs for farmers is going up dramatically. Oil's gone up in price, gone back down in price. It'll probably go back up in price. Very volatile situation. The other bit about the kind of the context is not just for problems, climate change, resource depletion. I suppose because of that, politically, food is flavour of the month. You know, someone who might possibly know said that Gordon Brown at the earlier part of last year, his number one priority was food security. You know, though he wasn't interested. All the other things down the list, right, food security. Because he suddenly got really worried. Because previously, the food policy of the UK was very simple. We don't need a policy. We're a rich country. So whenever we need food, we get the money out and we buy it. Done. Like, we'll concentrate on things we're good at, like banking. And so what then happened was that because of a series of crop failures in Australia and so on and so on, prices of a significant number of commodities went up very significantly. And most importantly, some of the countries that previously exported their food to us said, you know, we haven't got enough for ourselves. We'd love to sell it to you, but actually we're not going to. So they decided to stop exports. And all of a sudden, Gordon Brown goes, oh, there's a flaw in our plan. If they haven't got any food to eat, they won't sell it to us. Now, he got worried about that because all of a sudden he's realised that actually long-term this is a major issue. And if you've got a world in which food is becoming potentially more difficult to grow, you've got increasing competition over resources, then not being able to grow your own becomes a real issue. So food security was and is still very important. The other bit of context is, as a result of all these things, the GM lobby is now coming back and saying, so we need more genetically modified foods. And the best way to grow genetically modified foods is in bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger fields, more and more precision technology farming. You know, there are some benefits to precision farming and some of those things that you can do with technology, but I doubt we need GM because actually there's so much else we can do. But they're mounting a bigger campaign and they've got influential voices, and again, that's a context. Is this sort of, it's become, again, it's, agriculture is very interesting, isn't it? There's a lot of interesting debates going on. Other bit of context about food is that the whole sort of health side, and more people realising how important food is to people's well-being. So whether it's their mental health or their physical health, obesity being a big issue. Essentially, again, food is a way of connecting in with that, and imbalances in food are creating imbalances in our health. Okay, so there's the whole health agenda and the fact that people are increasingly seeing food and food growing as ways into supporting people to change the way their health is. So improving their mental health or improving their physical well-being. People are seeing food as a way of changing that. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I'll say about context, which is probably the last thing I'll say here, is that basically there's actually never been as much money around for local food projects. There's a £50 million pot called the Local Food Fund, or Local Food Scheme, which is out. I don't know if you've got an application in yet. I suspect you've been talking about it in the Grow Sheffield meetings. You haven't got a bid in yet. Put one in, then put another one in. Keep going until you get the money. Because basically there is money around. Esme Fairbairn Fund has got, Esme Fairbairn Foundation has got a food strand to what it's doing. People are realising that food is an interesting thing to fund because it connects with everybody in one way or another. Whether it's what they eat, or whether it's because they want to get out and meet people, whether it's because they want to lose weight, whether it's because they want to actually do something about climate change or community cohesion, or make the place more beautiful. Now, this is. I'm going to take you on to my next bit. The vision. Have to kind of squint your eyes a bit. This is one of my sort of favourite photographs, actually, of a Polish council estate. And I didn't have to search very hard to find it, because actually I have got a whole series of photographs like this. It is beautiful. It is a council estate. This is not the kind of posh part of town. What I like about it is it's beautiful, it's productive, and it shows that if you put growing space next to where people live and you give them permission to use it, they come up with the most amazing and fantastic spaces. They transform them. This to me is like a vision. It's a vision of self-reliance, not self-sufficiency. It's not about saying, okay, Sheffield, let's make sure we grow everything ourselves and do everything ourselves and, knit our own jumpers and a whole lot. It's about being self-reliant. So, we do what we can for ourselves, being really resourceful with what we've got. But still, there's still interchange and exchange with other people. It's creative. The great thing about allotments and these sorts of spaces is just incredible. I remember on your plot, there's all sorts of things going on in those sheds, isn't there? and again, we can bring that out. I think if you've got a vision, in a world in the future, we're going to have to be more resourceful in the future. And the food maybe is a way of bringing people to that. It's beautiful and it's productive. And the great thing is, food solves so many of the issues that we were talking about earlier in context. If you look at climate change, food is a really big, significant part of our eco-footprint. How we grow food is totally important in terms of the quality of soil, the quality of our water. So, again, crucially important. Okay, so here's the sort of vision. You've got to kind of imagine a bit, but I would like to see Leeds. I can't tell you what I think Sheffield should do, because that's for you lot to organise. But personally, I'd like to see Leeds, and really I would like to see the whole country, where our settlements, the towns and cities where we lived, we reviewed them in terms of how many of the spaces we got have been optimised. And I think optimum is a good thing rather than maximum. It's not about maximising production, it's about optimising. There's a really interesting study in the 30s done about land optimisation, which was kind of came and went, and I don't think much was particularly used from the report. It looked about how you could optimise land use in Britain. And it came up at Transition Town event in Leeds, actually. We're talking about Leeds, land in Leeds, and what's the way forward. And really what we thought we had to do was do a survey of how much of the land in Leeds has been optimised. Now, optimised might be for a number of different things. Optimum might be the optimum food growing space. It might be the optimum recreational space. So there's going to be different sorts of optimums. Then we did a little quick thought experiment. Can we think of any really optimised spaces in Leeds? We struggle to think really any. And I suspect in Sheffield, there are probably some lovely spaces, of course, but really we've got so much land around that's basically just mown flat. And I think really from a kind of a thinking about the future and thinking about just... where we need to go, it'll go in a second. Think about where we need to go. I think we need to optimise our land, and it's all up for grabs. It's the car parks up for grabs, parks are up for grabs, our home gardens are up for grabs, all these different spaces, schools, school grounds, they're all opportunities to rethink how else could this look. What other plants could we have growing here? What solar technologies could we be incorporating into the fabric of the building? How could we get more social interaction? How can we make a more sociable space? So my vision would be, you know, something like this across the city. And then with surrounded by a greenbelt full of market gardens. Because we can't grow everything in the middle of the city, but we can grow some, but we can grow a huge amount around it. Okay, so in terms of initiatives, what's going on to make all these things happen? Well, I suppose the thing to say is, in summary, huge amounts. It's actually quite incredible how much is going on. In Britain, there are all sorts of projects, you know, there's things like Transition Towns initiatives. There are people specialising in green roofs. We had someone to the LEAF AGM. Was it Sheffield Green Roof Centre? Mm-hmm. Fantastic stuff. Food Up Front. Has anyone seen the Food Up Front project? It's a great thing. Some people did a permaculture design course and then thought, what can I do practical? Right, let's get people growing in their front gardens. There's a whole network of people now helping people grow in their front gardens and back gardens. Incredible edible ptarmigan. Has anybody come across incredible edible ptarmigan? There's these three dynamos at the middle of it who just seem to have lots and lots of energy, a bit like what goes on here, I think. And they've just said, right, okay, let's make incredible edible ptarmigan. And I mean, the thing about it is the effect, you can already laughing, people smiling, people thinking, what might that be? And it's starting to have really interesting effects. The local schools interested, how can we be part of this? Parks are interested. People are growing all sorts of things in really interesting ways. And lots of little initiatives are then starting up within it. Old Slenningford Farm up near Ripon is a particular favourite of mine. But they've got one of the biggest forest gardens in the country. It's absolutely amazing. Very productive. Buckets full of strawberries. And pigs and all sorts of different things. Old Slenningford Farm. I mean, I'm just picking out a few little bits and pieces, really. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is the 2012 initiative in London, where they're basically saying by 2012, for the Olympics, they want to have 2012 new community gardens and growing initiatives. You know, you think, well, okay, there's a momentum building, basically. There are lots of initiatives. They're showing what's possible. They're kind of identifying what we still need to learn and what skills and systems we'll need for the future. And, of course, there is one other initiative that I think I would enthuse about, which is, of course, Grow Sheffield. What an amazing job you've all done, basically. Bring together lots of different ideas, creating local connections, getting the debate going, providing some practical working examples. And the Abundance Project is undoubtedly, I think there's, I don't know how many kind of hits you've had on the website, but lots of people know about it. You know, so I think really, Grow Sheffield, I mean, what a fantastic name, Grow Sheffield. It's a bit like Incredible Edible Ptarmigan. It's starting to get people to think, okay, come on, actually, this is something we do every day. We eat every day. So let's bring this into our lives in a much more engaging way. Something isn't sort of tucked away, it's just that's what the agribusiness lot does and we'll just buy it. Actually, let's bring this back in as something that we, as part of our lives. And I think that's what Grow Sheffield a bit is doing and the other initiatives are doing. And I'd encourage you to keep going. So I think I'm just going to stop there and then see, was that more than 20 minutes? And how do we get some debate going?
Yeah.